the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, it's all important to plan if you're heading into retirement, but what about those unplanned scenarios that show up as we're dealing today, whether it's a pandemic, whether it's rising gas prices or shortage of food? What should you do to prepare? Well, let's discuss that. Joining me on the program from Peak Prosperity is Chris Martinson. Chris, you know, I think as Americans, if we look back over the last couple of years, we've seen things that we have never had to experience in this country before. Shutting down the economy, mask mandates, vaccine mandates, things that Americans are just not used to, where a lot of our freedoms and things that we're used to dealing with are being stripped and taken away. So how does one plan around this? Because people are hoping we go back to normal, but I'm not sure we ever are going back to normal.
Well, you're asking the million-dollar question, and I think you've got the right answer, which is we have to start by letting go of the idea that if we just duck our heads down and, you know, let this pass over, that we will get back to something we could call normal. Those times are gone, and we could analyze it from any one of 10 directions. But I mean, come on, Jim, even if we just look at where we are with respect to expenditures, debts, deficit, money printing, just economically, it's clear we are on a path that ends in its own destruction. And, you know, I mean that literally. Like, this is, you know, we end up with the loss of the dollar as a useful currency unit. That's the path we're on. And I guess, you know, the short answer is, I don't see anybody in leadership positions who's serious, right? They're seriously entertaining. Maybe nuclear war with Russia wouldn't be such a bad thing. They're seriously saying, oh, well, let's just not use Russian oil. We'll just ban that. We'll just knock that right off the market. You know, it's just, these are non-serious approaches to very serious things. And the Federal Reserve is at the top of all of it, as far as I'm concerned. So how do you see it?
You know, I see a couple of things developing in the same way. The thing that we're starting to see with this Ukraine war, you're seeing Saudi Arabia going to sell oil to China in yuan. Russia is going to be dealing in rubles and several other Gulf states. So, Chris, is this the beginning or the end of the petrodollar?
Well, I think it is. It clearly is. So the first warning sign we had was, I guess, almost a month ago, 3 weeks probably from now, when we saw that Biden had picked up the phone and tried to call both the UAE and Saudi Arabia. Nobody picked up the phone. They're like, nope, don't want to talk to you about this stuff. And then just a week later, they said, oh, yeah, hey, we're talking about pricing our oil in yuan. And then, of course, we saw Russia come out and say they want to price it in rubles. And they just also said, hey, maybe Bitcoin and gold. Huge sea change. I think few people really appreciate the degree to which our prosperity in this country of the United States is hinged on that deal that Kissinger struck all those decades ago with Saudi Arabia to enshrine the U.S. dollar as the unit of currency when oil is being traded. That gave us what's called the petrodollar. It's a long, involved story, but let's just say it's kind of like we were born with a massive trust fund and we were allowed to like spend way beyond our means. That's what's coming to an end. And so if somebody said, you know, hey, there's three legs on a stool for the dollar's value, two of those are the petrodollar. I'm really worried about what happens if we lose that status.
Let me bring up something that you and I have looked at over the years, and that's peak oil. And one of the issues that I think that the markets are not ready for, Chris, and this goes back to Twilight in the Desert, Matt Simmons, and that is Saudi Arabia. Because the world has this feeling that Saudi Arabia has 2.5 million barrels of spare capacity. They could take it up to 12.5. Chris, they have never done that, and they can barely get it up to 10. When is the world going to wake up to the fact is that this capacity we think that exists out there doesn't exist?
Well, I'm surprised it's taken them this long to even, you know, I read reports all the time, and I was just reading another report from some erstwhile Wall Street analyst who said, oh, you know, OPEC has all this capacity, and they just state it as if it's a fact. So I actually go into the individual countries and I look at all of them, and no, OPEC doesn't have that capacity. You can clearly see lots of OPEC countries have been dwindling for years, years and years and years. Their oil supply has been going down. There's only a few, really, there's only four where you could say maybe there's capacity, but you mentioned the most important, Saudi Arabia. They hit 11.5 million barrels of production per day very briefly for 1 month way back a number of years ago. Since then, typically 10 and a half, they bumped along, and now they've been just, you know, coming down. They're well under 10 now. I don't think they're going to get past 10 and a half. I don't think they can. When the world wakes up to that, it's just such a different world. And I think that's why it's having a hard time waking up to it, because it says that your long-term growth prospects no longer make sense. So if you're a pension fund and you have a 75-year horizon and you're counting on 7.5% stated rate of real growth in your portfolio, that's not going to happen without when you get to peak oil. Same thing is absolutely true for just anybody. Like, you know, what is a company with a price earnings ratio of 200 saying, well, we think we're willing to wait 200 years for that our dollar to get earned by this company? Or it's saying the growth prospects of this company are so great, I'm willing to, you know, pay that much. But that can't be true across the entire universe of stocks in a no growth environment. So this is the biggest piece of information anybody can get their heads around, is what are financial assets, which is where most people have their wealth parked, what are those worth in a world of zero growth? Now, that might not come to pass. You can argue with that, but you should at least entertain the idea and ask and answer that question, because the answer is, well, these bonds are worth a lot less and these stocks are worth a lot less. And so that's, I think, a very serious conundrum for most people. Really big idea, too, to get your head around.
Well, this also gets to, in terms of retirement planning, if you look at my industry, you know, we've had this 60-40 allocation, 60% stocks, 40% bonds. How is that going to work? I don't think it will going forward when you have energy shortages, skyrocketing inflation, massive amounts of debt, and the loss of the dollar's status. I just don't think that kind of sort of planning for retirement that has been used for almost 50, 60 years is going to work going forward. What's your view?
It can't work. So let's say you're in the 40 part of that story. We're in bonds. Right now, every single bond fund is a certificate of confiscation environment, period. Right? I don't know of a single bond fund that, you know, except for super, super high risk, but even junk bonds, what are they yielding? 4%, maybe 5% right now? The stated rate of inflation is 8, but I honestly believe it's closer to 15. But hey, let's take it at 8 even. So if you know that your bond portion is losing money right now, and I don't see anything to change that for a while, then that's working against you. That's compounding in reverse. And by the way, I don't know about your situation, but my property taxes went up almost 50% last year, right? I think that there's not a chance that we're going to see anything other than people's expenses growing at a far faster pace than their bond holdings. So that part, the 40 part, guaranteed. But then the 60 part, I mean, we're so due for a recession. We're way over leveraged. This has all been propped up with trillions and trillions of funny money printing. You know, they're going to try more of that. But, you know, a recession is probably in the cards. And it was you, Jim. I tell people, I credit you with this all the time. Oil is the new Fed's fund rate. You said that years ago. It's absolutely genius. And it's right. The Fed can't control the price of oil. They can raise rates from 0.25% to 0.5% or whatever. That doesn't affect the guy and gal on the street driving their truck or, you know, just trying to commute to work. That oil price right now is at punishing levels. It's guaranteed in times past has always caused recessions. And I think we're just getting started in seeing the price spikes in oil.
Yeah. In fact, Peter Zion in his new book says 150 could maybe be the new price for the West and even higher in other places. And, you know, this is the thing that this is going to change and hit so many people by surprise, Chris, because, you know, as you get closer to retirement, you have these things called target funds where they shorten the maturities on bonds, maybe a little bit more in cash and bonds, less in stocks. But when you head into retirement, most people are going to go in some kind of fixed income or safe type investment, bonds, CDs. That's not working. And I don't think the retirement community is ready to face this yet.
Yeah. And unfortunately, people who are retired don't face the average rate of inflation. You know, according to the BLS, which stands for the Bureau of Lying Statistics for me, they claim that our medical inflation was 3.5% last year. Yeah, I had a 21.8% increase in the premiums for my healthcare bronze package totally nasty little policy for my family on top of the 14% the year before and the 26% the year before. So I'm facing high double-digit inflation in medical services. Most people are. And so when you look at drug pricing, and then when you look at rents going up, or you look at property taxes going up, it's going to be a very rare elderly person who's going to be able to claim that their rate of inflation is anywhere close to the average. They, in fact, experience higher rates of inflation. So now you're caught in a really difficult spot. Do you take a lower standard of living over time, or do you take big risks? Now, in retirement, that's not when you want to take any risks at all, if you could help it. But, you know, who was it that said that, you know, bonds, U.S. Treasury bonds used to be, they denoted the risk-free rate of return. Well, now they denote the return-free risk, right? 2.2%, was it 2.4 now on the 10-year? 2.4. Are you crazy? You know, you're going to lose money on those one way or the other. And that's just a terrible position to be in.
And what are the alternatives? You know, for the first time in my career, we have dividend yields, at least on certain stocks, that are higher than we can get in bonds. But not too many people want to go 60, 70, 80% in the stock market for dividends because of the volatility of the stock market itself.
Yeah, I'm I'm starting to lean more into those dividend plays myself, but I also am a big hard asset fan. So I'm just parked, you know, gold, silver, trees, land, things like that. So I still believe in that side of the story. Increasingly, I'm starting to believe that maybe there's, you know, more and more of a story to be made for Bitcoin and things like that. But otherwise, I think you have to look at the dividend plays. I would be honestly very, very bullish on a number of the large cap oil plays here, except for all the Democrats who are saying they want to do a windfall tax on them, right? It's just like, oh yeah, hey, we just want to seize that money because we think it's unfair. It's just these people, I can't tell, Jim, if they're just that ignorant or if they're intentionally trying to damage things. I can't parse it out anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, here in California, we used to be at one time the country's largest oil producer. We know we have billions of barrels offshore they can't get access to. So our production is down to under 400,000 barrels, and yet we have plenty of oil that we could be drilling here and supply it ourselves. And the same thing, Chris, that we're doing here, we already shut down one nuclear power plant, and then we're going to shut down our second one in 2025. And yet we're going to mandate that everybody drive EVs and you're not going to have gas cars. Well, where's electricity going to come from to power these EVs? I don't know if they thought that through yet.
No, and they haven't actually taken the larger energy equation, which is how much energy does it take to make an EV versus a gas car, and you know how much do you ultimately save, and this and that, right? It turns out it's not quite as compelling as you would think right up front. But the most important part is California's grid is really stressed already. I think taking those two nuclear plants off is going to really stress it. I'm a huge fan of nuclear going forward. I think it's a great investment thesis. We're going to use it. And if we don't build these stupid, you know, Mark V boiling water reactors, which are very expensive and prone to doing dumb things like melting down, if we used some of the new technology, which has been out for decades, pebble bed reactors, smaller nukes, things like that, I actually think that's a big part of the solution going forward. And as we've learned, though, you know, alternative energy is nice, but it's really still an add-on to a system. We don't have baseload capacity yet. We don't have enough batteries or other storage forms. You know, when people ask me, Chris, what's your, you know, why don't you like solar? I'm like, I like solar. I have it. It's just this other thing called nighttime, right? It happens, you know? So it's just how it is. So most people, though, this is to get back to this term, Jim, we don't have serious approaches to very serious predicaments at this stage. So just suggesting everybody's going to drive electric cars is unserious as a concept. And it's very easy to prove. Give me a crayon and a napkin and some time, and we can sketch out how many quadrillions of BTUs we get from fossil fuels, where that energy actually comes from, how complicated the system is, what baseload, da da da. There's complexity to it, but we don't really seem to have people interested in that. They have a narrative they like, but they don't understand the consequences or the details.
And when you take a look at this, the cost of energy, and as I talked about earlier, it's sort of like the new Fed funds rate. I can't think of any recession that wasn't preceded by a rise in oil prices, which is where we find ourselves today. And yet, Chris, you've got Wall Street saying, well, you know, the Fed's going to give us a soft landing. They may raise interest rates a couple times. Personally, I don't think they get that far with raising interest rates without bringing down the entire economy, just at the massive, and I mean massive, amount of debt. What are we now adding, about $400 billion a month in deficits? They just passed a supplemental spending bill of $1.5 trillion. That's just going to put more money into the economy and cause inflation to go higher.
I'll believe the Fed when I see it, right? I'm a big believer in actions, not words. So the Fed said, oh, you know, we're going to stop our bond purchases. Well, yesterday was Wednesday, and that's important because every Wednesday they update their balance sheet at the Federal Reserve, and you can find it at the St. Louis Fed site. So you go there and you type in Federal Reserve balance sheet, and you find out that this last Wednesday was the largest and highest amount for that balance sheet ever, which was larger than the prior Wednesday, which was larger than the prior Wednesday, and so on. So they haven't stopped adding to their balance sheet. And oh, it was only $8 billion this last week. But Jim, I'm old enough to remember when $5 billion in a month used to make my hair stand up, you know, and now, oh my goodness, you know, here we are with $8 billion for a week and people are shrugging saying, well, it's less than 50 or whatever, you know, some prior weeks have been. It's insane. So the Fed, I think you're right. I think the stock market is signaling as much. Nobody believes that the Fed has the sort of leadership that's capable of doing what they used to call take the punch bowl away, but it would be very unpopular, right? Particularly in an election year, if it caused some sort of like downturn. But, you know, we also have inflation. So, which is also politically unpopular. The Fed has clearly said, we are going to protect stocks here. We're going to throw the entire middle class, which I call from 95% on down. We're going to throw all of them under the bus. And that's what they've been doing for, I don't know, 15, 20 years, ever since Bernanke, horrible human being. Janet Yellen, even worse. Powell comes off nice, but oh my gosh, he's been just absolutely destructive. I have nothing but, and I'm going to use this word carefully, contempt for the cavalier way in which they've thrown an entire generation and generations, as well as middle-class people, under the bus in service of their precious financial asset markets.
You know, this kind of reminds me of what we went through in the 70s. We saw rising inflation. We had geopolitical conflicts. We saw real estate prices take off, commodity prices take off. And Chris, the stock market went sort of nowhere in real terms for 18 years. But if you were in hard assets, as we've been talking about, real estate, farmland, commodities, you know, oil stocks, energy, that's where you made money, just as you did in the 00 decade. I mean, take a look at, you know, the beginning of this century, where basically hard assets were the star performers in the 00 decade.
True. And the things that are a little bit different this time that we have to talk about is the level of overall indebtedness of the culture. And that includes two things. One, the debt we can track. It's about $85 trillion in the U.S. right now, right? That's state debt, local, corporate, federal. That's debt. Then the IOUs, which are the underfunded or unfunded pensions and Medicare, Medicaid, all that. That's another, well, what, maybe $200-300 trillion? Depends who's doing the counting. Right? They're unpayable amounts, right? So we have that. And then the oil shock we had in the 70s was a political shock, meaning that politicians, diplomats, serious people could get together, solve it, and you could open the stopcocks again, and you could get the oil flowing. That's not what we're facing this time. And it's because we have about 6 years of serious underinvestment from 2015 to 2021, probably this year as well, although we'll see an uptick because of oil prices. But we have 6 years absolutely failing to invest in upstream oil and gas discovery. And we're going to discover slowly, painfully, that you can't just turn that on a dime. You can't like throw a trillion at it and make it better. It just takes time to find these things and build out the infrastructure and bring new fields onto play. So we're going to be facing, by my estimate, unless there's a capital D depression, at least 2 to 3 years of underperforming supplies compared to demand. And that's going to create huge price spikes in oil.
And not only huge price spikes in oil, Chris, but if you think of everything that we buy in a store, it got there by airplane, train, or truck. So that's going to be reflected in just about everything we pay for. I don't care, from pizza to groceries.
I can't think of anything that oil doesn't touch. Even if you said, well, you know, my massage given by the vegan who drives the plug-in Prius, they're not affected. Like, oh no, they are. You know, when you look at how their vegetables got grown, right? It's still, you know, it's in everything. It is. And so we're going to see that bleeding through. And then on top of that, you know, we had this thing called COVID. And honestly, when you look at it by the numbers, we just did it all wrong. Was it serious? Sure. But was it shut down the world economy and wreck it serious? No. But here we are. And now we have these supply chain shortfalls that are rippling uncontrollably through our entire supply chain. But to the point, just to bring it down to one thing, where we don't have sufficient fertilizer this year anywhere in the world to grow an ordinary crop. And we don't know what the impact of that is going to be yet. Here's a prediction. We're going to end up with a lot of soybeans next year, because I've talked to a lot of farmers. Soybeans can make their own nitrogen. So at least you can make up for that by growing them. I think a lot of farmers are going to say no wheat, no corn. We're going to grow soybeans. So we might have a lot of soybeans next year, but man, we're going to be short on the grains that actually feed the world. That's going to have huge impacts.
Yeah, they've been talking, Chris, because of the war. You've got Russia that exports about 25% of the world's wheat. You've got Ukraine, that's another 10%. Mm-hmm. So they're talking about famine and food shortages. What's your take on that?
Well, I hope it doesn't come to pass, but that is how it's shaping up right now. And that's only if we don't have some, you know, weather anomalies that hit things. But China's reporting they had flooding. Very bad wheat planting season for spring wheat there. And we're seeing the same thing in parts of the upper Midwest in the United States. So it's not shaping up, you know, weather is not being cooperative in this. So you add all that together. I actually think that the chance of us not having a very serious price spike in food this year, if not actual shortages and famines, is low. It's evaporating by the day. Nothing is really going our way in this story right now.
So given what you see right now, what would your advice be to individuals planning for retirement? Because the world that they grew up in is not the world they're going to be living in the next 10 years.
Well, this is something that I've actually been talking about for a long time. My basic advice is become resilient. You know, just educate yourself. First thing, get the context. That's what your listeners do, I know. Figure out what's going on in the world. So at least you can say, hey, I can't plan on normal, that old world returning. Because if it does, great, I'm happy, you know, that's wonderful. But if it doesn't, what's my plan? And then there are things people need to consider, which include investing in your home. Most people don't know this. You can get usually in an average, poorly built, poorly insulated home, maybe with bad windows or whatever, you can get pretty significant savings from insulating and putting in new windows and things like that. So I think energy is going to be more expensive. So people should do what they can to spend less in the future on that energy. That's how a business thinks, right? We invest so that we can make more efficient processes going forward. So make your house more efficient. If you have a chance to get more efficient appliances, all good things to do, because, you know, at least you'll be less exposed to that. As well, you know, I got a garden going. I think if everybody, you know, to the extent you have the capability of getting tapped into either local food production or having your own victory gardens, time for that again. That's what I think is going to really make it for a lot of folks. Added benefit, you're eating healthier food that you grew yourself, and maybe it doesn't have some awful things on it from the agricultural industry. And then I think you got to be nimble in this environment, and you got to figure out where the puck is going. To me, we're looking at ultra, ultra generational lows that we just came off the bottom of looking at the ratio of commodity prices to financial assets, and let's call them stocks at this point. But I really think we're about to see that huge rotation away from paper, back into things. Things are commodities. There are companies you can get involved in there. There's miners, energy companies I still really love. I think that's where I see this all going at this point. But I commiserate. It is a tough environment. I've never seen anything like this, and I don't think anybody has.
No, and you know, some of the things you just talked about, better insulation and you growing a garden. You know, as we talk about this, people listening to that, you know, that sounds weird, but that was a world that existed during World War II. I mean, we had victory gardens. People had gardens in their homes that they use and grow their own food. So it's not as outlandish as it may sound today.
No, it's coming back. It's early. You know, I think a lot of people might be raising their eyebrows going, that's weird. But trust me, in a year, won't seem weird. We'll all be doing it and talking about it. It's coming.
All right. Well, listen, Chris, as we close, tell people about your website. You've really put some good research out there. Well, I don't care if it's on the pandemic or things like peak oil and other issues.
Oh, thanks, Jim. Yeah, peakprosperity.com is the website, and we have both public information. We got some subscription information, and that, yeah, I like to analyze things. I figure things out. My gift is to take complicated things, explain them so people can digest them and take action on them. So what I really care about is people taking action to become resilient. I do what I can to help people figure out how to do that, but they also just anything people can do to become more financially resilient, more emotionally resilient, and more socially resilient. These are all things that I think are going to separate people who merely survive this coming period and people who thrive.
All right. Well, great stuff, Chris. As always, pleasure having you back on the program. And do yourself a favor. Go visit Chris's site. A lot of great stuff, whether you're looking at the vaccine or just overall market commentary. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Jim. Thanks for having me.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.